I think the most shocking is continuously to experience, not just for myself, for everyone in my community, the lack of preparation. So many women still don't know and are not told that they're going to embark on a surgically onset menopause. We still have surgeons removing women's organs, our ovaries, and not preparing us that this is going to be surgically onset menopause and it's medical gaslighting. You would never remove a man's testicles and not tell him what would happen. It just wouldn't happen. And it happens all the time to many of the women in our community who are in their 30s.
Welcome to This is Perimenopause, the podcast where we delve into the transformative journey of perimenopause and beyond. I'm one of your hosts, Mikkel.
And I'm your other host, Michelle. And we know firsthand how confusing, overwhelming, and downright lonely this phase of life can be.
Join us as we share real-life stories and expert advice to help you navigate this journey and advocate for your best health.
We used to think menopause signaled an end, but really, it's just the beginning.
When Dani Binnington received her cancer diagnosis, her initial focus wasn't on aiding fellow survivors through a better menopause journey. Her primary drive was ensuring she'd witness her three little girls stepping through the school gates. However, today, she stands as a passionate advocate for patients, lending her voice to women navigating menopause post-cancer. Dani's passion extends beyond cancer to anyone in perimenopause. In her words, we need to look at evidence-based facts, make this available to all women, and then take into account that each woman is different. Welcome, Dani.
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, we're so excited. I'm Mikkel. I am the one of us who sent you that impassioned off-the-cuff email a little while ago, and we're so excited to have you join us today. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for giving me a voice and everyone else in my community a voice.
So, Dani, maybe we'll get you to tell us a bit about how menopause and cancer was started and why you do what you do.
Yeah, of course. You know, sitting here being a guest on your show, I very much sort of think, oh, I need to switch my mindset a little bit from being a host to my own show to now being a guest. And what I want to convey to you today is almost the bundles of hours of experience that all of my guests and experts and survivors have shared with me so that I can sort of share a little bit of that with all of you on top of my own experience. So I was 33 when I was diagnosed with breast cancer. I was a young mum to three really young children. So my twins were two at the time. I had identical twin girls. They just started to sleep Wow. through the night, just about, because they were really bad sleepers. And we thought life was getting a bit easier. We had a four-year-old, an older sister, three girls. Life was busy. And I was sitting and watching the telly, and I found a lump. I was just having a grope in my armpit, and there it was. And I had a funny feeling in my tummy, like this isn't right. And I was very quick acting of taking mm-hmm. myself to the doctor. And then everything sort of happened to me and to us as a family. All of the procedures confirmed. It was a very aggressive type of breast cancer. And then I embarked on treatment like most people. Chemotherapy, radiotherapy was part of my treatment plan, surgeries, multiple surgeries. And then later I found out I was a carrier to a genetic mutation, the BRCA gene. And that gives me a bigger chance of more breast cancers. So I thought, well, that's fine. I'm done with breast cancer. I'm going to have a double mastectomy. So a couple of years after my initial cancer treatment, I thought I'm okay to let go of my breasts. But then I also had to make a decision about what to do with my ovaries, and I didn't want them to give me ovarian cancer. Every family member on my dad's side had passed away from ovarian cancer.
Wow.
And so I knew that was the right thing for me to do, but I also knew it was going to come with the bigger question, how do you live in a postmenopausal body at the age of 39?
And you were aware that actually, like, because I think a lot of women aren't even aware that they're about to hit this big wall when their ovaries get removed. Was that just, you had done your research? Is that how you knew to expect that?
I love that question because I would have forgotten to mention that, Michelle. At the time in the UK, the menopause conversation had already started to boom a little bit. We had some big doctors and voices and campaigners to start to talk about perimenopause and menopause. And in my previous, before podcasting and becoming a founder of a not-for-profit life, I'd always run networking events and also well-being events for women. We talked about everything from positive parenting to how to make sauerkraut and kimchi and fermented foods, anything, like anything that sort of tickled our fancy, right? And so I started to bring experts in to talk about menopause and the perimenopause as part of the services we provided. And so I was learning, constantly thinking, okay, these women are telling me that menopause is a challenge. And some women are saying that surgically onset menopause is drastic because it happens from one day to the next and it can be really severe. Mm-hmm. And this is what I am sort of tinkering with. So I was putting on all of these expert-led events through work. And at the same time, I kept thinking, yeah, but that is me. That might be me. What am I going to do? And so I went and embarked on a real journey of discovery. And what really happened, Michelle, is that my doctors couldn't give me good enough answers. So I went to try and book, you know, all of the appointments through the national health system, but I also tried to have appointments with some private experts and specialists that I paid for. And I got conflicting advice, sometimes wrong advice, and sometimes very unhelpful guidance. And I thought, wow, I've survived cancer for almost 5 years at that point. And I managed to navigate how to do a double mastectomy, how to recover, how to put myself back in order. And now no one is really giving me clear guidance on how to manage menopause after cancer. And that's when I got a bee in my bonnet, as we'd say in England, and I really became outraged at the lack of support and the lack of care there was. And everything else just fell into place since then.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Amazing. So Menopause and Cancer, you have the podcast. Tell us a little bit more about, you know, what else, the work that you do.
Yeah. And so I then became outraged, thinking, well, there is no clear plan for me, how am I meant to navigate this? So I went and set up my first Facebook group and I invited other women in saying, hey, are you a cancer survivor of any shape or form after any type of cancer? And did your cancer treatment also put you into the menopause? Like, we know chemotherapy, radiotherapy, hormone treatment or surgery can all onset menopause. And actually 90% of all of the people in my community who've had a cancer diagnosis have been pushed into menopause as a result of their cancer treatment. So whoever you know, a friend, a mother, an aunt, anyone you know that is a person with ovaries who's had cancer treatment, the chances are extremely high that treatment has put them into menopause temporarily or permanently. And the chances are that they might not know are also very high because we just are so poorly informed. Mm-hmm. So that first Facebook group, within a few weeks, there were thousands of us. And I thought, okay, I'm not alone. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, how am I going to combine what I used to do with all of my well-being workshops and how can I elevate that message? And I thought, well, I set up a little podcast. And I always thought, well, if a few hundred people listen, that would be amazing. You know, we have over 20,000 unique downloads every month now. So it's amazing how the community has grown.
It's amazing.
But I never thought what we were doing was enough. So then I've created a program in collaboration with another charity to guide people through a structured process of how, if they're struggling, they can find connection, support, and clear guidance. And I did that in collaboration with other charities. But the problem I had was other charities, they have an angle. So some charities are really great for supporting young people. Other charities will support your breast cancer patient. Other charities are there for the womb cancer patients. And I thought, why are we isolating this? This is crazy. Like, I think the menopause conversation is already isolated. And so I want to unite everyone that has struggled with an early onset menopause. And so I thought, well, I just need to do it myself. So I set up a not-for-profit because I didn't want people to have to pay for these programs. I didn't want people to have to find us through other charity partners. And I thought, well, we're just going to do it ourselves. We're a really small organization, so, but with a big mission.
What are you called?
We're called Menopause and Cancer.
Menopause and Cancer. Do you also have something called Healthy Whole Me?
Yeah. And so Healthy Whole Me is my own journey of exploration of how, for so long after I had survived cancer, I was trying to find the healthy version of myself again that felt a whole. I felt my boobs were treated, my ovaries were removed, parts of my body were prodded and pronged, and what was missing for me was a wholesome way of recovery. And so Healthy Whole Me was born out of my quest, really, to find that version of myself again. Initially, I really threw myself into healthy eating and diet. But when my diet was the best, my mental health was like really shockingly poor. And so I knew I wasn't whole. I wasn't healed. What else do I need to do? And so I embarked on so many other things that sort of in the end helped me put my sort of jigsaw puzzle back together.
And what kind of things are those?
Well, the question is, what didn't I do, Michelle? I got a lot of things wrong and a lot of things I tried without there much being evidence. And I didn't always know exactly. I didn't always have a plan. And it's partly what I want to help people with. If you have a plan, you can save yourself a lot of energy. And so diet was huge for me. And it was really, initially, it was at removing things. I thought, I'm going to go alcohol free. I'm going to not have any dairy in my diet. I'm not going to have, no meat, you know, all of those things, sugar. I'm going to remove all of those things from my diet until I realized that I was cooking three different meal times at every opportunity and it was exhausting. And my husband ran off to the fish and chip shop secretly because I was cooking courgette spaghetti.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Uh-huh. So it wasn't sustainable. It wasn't enjoyable. It wasn't how I knew I could continue to eat and cook with my family, right? And so it was all about adding things back in. And luckily, I made that U-turn that I call my own food revolution. And it's now about, well, how many things can I eat in a day? Like totally switched. And that also then expanded to, okay, my mental health was still poor when my diet was, I could have cooked for like Gordon Ramsay. I was really quite confident, you know, but I felt rubbish.
Yeah.
I felt scared that my cancer would come back. I felt exhausted and I just felt not me. And I wanted to find my old version of myself again. And I was years on from my initial cancer diagnosis and my quality of life was still really impacted by my poor mental health. I just knew I needed to find more things. Mm. And so it was counseling and I tried hypnotherapy. So I tried loads of things to help with my mental health. I also then embarked on yoga, and yoga really helped me not to just rebuild my physical house, but also to feel a bit more centered and not worry so much about tomorrow. And it was the only time in my week where I thought, oh, I'm not so worried that cancer's going to come and get me. Mm-hmm. It was being present. And so I thought, if I can do that for the hour, what else is there? I suddenly thought there is potential that one day I can live a life again that would become less anxiety and fear driven and a little bit more present.
And are those the type of things that you're teaching in your program?
Yeah. So with my early experience of all of the doctors sort of not being as good as they could have been, maybe, but I think they were amazing. But I think what I've realized is no doctor alone is ever going to give me all the answers I need. Mm-hmm. So I need my oncologist to be brilliant and my surgeon to be brilliant. That's great. But they're treating the cancer. Once my cancer had left, who was going to help me rebuild my house? I needed diet advice. I want women that come to us not overhaul their diet because we all are so different, but we can all improve. And if we can improve a little bit and sustain that, oh my God, we're winning. And we do need to move. Because so many people in my community have joint ache and really debilitating symptoms, especially if they're on long-term hormone treatment, like aromatase inhibitors or tamoxifen. And we've got to move through it in a safe way and bring that connection back to our body. Because for a long time, I've lost trust, of course, in my body. This body that has grown this tumor and that's really threatened my identity and also my life on this planet. It took a long time to give it a bit of trust again, to sort of trust it was going to do the right thing again. And yoga was a brilliant way for me. Mm. And what came with yoga was an access, a little door opened up to meditation and mindfulness. And that brought me down a whole path of discovery, of breath work, of cold water exposure, of trying different healing modalities. And each brought me something different at different times. Yeah. And so we do teach that. Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
That's amazing. Your journey, although born out of something incredibly terrifying and scary, does also sound very beautiful. Thank you for sharing it with us. I also, as you're talking, keep thinking, yeah, and this, you know, this is about a journey because of cancer, but it also is very similar to a lot of perimenopausal journeys for many women. You know, many women just in perimenopause struggle to get the recognition and care they deserve. I can't imagine how dismal and scary it is to sort out menopause and cancer. What for you has been the most shocking when it comes to treatment-induced menopause?
I think the most shocking is continuously to experience, not just for myself, for everyone in my community, the lack of preparation women get. And Michelle, this is back to your point. So many women still don't know and are not told that they're going to embark on a surgically onset menopause. We still have surgeons removing women's organs, our ovaries, and not preparing us that this is going to be surgically onset menopause. And it's medical gaslighting. You would never remove a man's testicles and not tell him what happened. It just wouldn't happen.
Wow.
And it happens all the time to many of the women in our community who are in their 30s. And yes, some of them might be contraindicated to hormone replacement therapy because of the type of cancer they have had, but not all. But for some women, there is even no contraindication and they're not offered their hormones back because no one's talking about what happens to them.
I was just going to say, Danny, this is how I found you, because my mother recently had a breast cancer diagnosis and elected for a double mastectomy with reconstruction, very decisive, scared, but okay, this is what it is. And this is how my mother is, just very decisive and moves forward. And that's great. But the debacle around whether she could continue hormone replacement therapy or menopausal hormone therapy was probably the most stress-inducing part of this entire experience. And it was shocking to me how she did not have hormone-positive cancer. And yet it was shocking to me how many providers, because as you know, when you have a cancer diagnosis, there are a lot of providers that come into play. But the discrepancy in the advice and the panic from some of them was outrageous.
It's so good that you're raising this, because it's conflicting advice that many cancer survivors get when it comes to managing menopause after cancer. But you also get it for anyone navigating perimenopause naturally. There's a lot of conflicting advice, different opinions out there, who to believe. And then you need to try and trust yourself. And how do we do that? We can only really trust when we have evidence and facts, and this is how we base our decisions on. It's not narratives and stories, although we know they influence us. But when our healthcare providers that are meant to really help us have different opinions, it makes it really, really difficult. And of course, there are so many different types of cancer, and we can't throw every woman after breast cancer into one boat. And I think a lot of time this is what's happening. We've become so good at treating cancers differently, but we haven't really helped women yet in how to manage different types of cancers and menopause in different ways. And so at the moment, it's like everyone who's at breast cancer is contraindicated to HRT. It's blanket advice. It's very boring to me because, of course, no one just needs to should get lumped into. But we know it happens. It's awful. We know also there is a sense of grief and loss, not just with the person you were before cancer, before this has happened, but then also before maybe people started hormone replacement therapy. Mm-hmm. And especially when it's really worked for you, there is a real sense of loss. Am I going to lose that side again? Is someone going to take that away from me again? It really does feel like a loss. And people often then say, oh my gosh, just pull yourself together. These doctors are trying to save life. Surely being on HRT should be the last of your worries. But no, whatever your worries are, maybe someone is listening to this who is supporting someone who is going through cancer. It's just to really think, let's have open ears. Whatever that person's worries are, they're okay because it's that person's worries. It doesn't matter how big, how small, what you think about those worries. If it mattered to your mom, it mattered to her, and we need to talk about it and provide care.
Do you counsel other individuals, or through your programs, do you counsel individuals on how to figure out whose advice do I, well, first of all, how do I get advice about menopause, A, and B, because there is so much conflicting information, how do you suggest people sort through and learn perhaps that it is their choice and how to make the best decision possible for themselves?
Yeah. The first thing we do is we connect women to one another, because the first thing people say to me, Dani, I feel so isolated. There is no one like me. And I go, oh my gosh, there is thousands in a similar situation.
Welcome and let me introduce you. Here they all are.
Yeah. And that already sometimes takes a bit of that edge off. And when you bring people together, whether that's an in-person workshop or whether that is online or in a program, you can just see that another chair is being pulled into the circle, and that is the chair of relief. And a little bit of a weight is sort of dropping off people's shoulders, thinking, oh, okay. So a workshop I hosted yesterday, three women who were on after a hormone positive cancer, are contraindicated to hormone replacement therapy. They're very early on in their treatment, in managing the menopause. And they said, I'm just so paid off with everyone around me being on HRT and telling me how amazing it is, and I can't have it. And the person who said it was a bit like almost shy in saying it, but you should have seen the others going, yeah, that's how I feel. And I didn't dare to say it because I don't want to be rude. And suddenly there was this shared like, yeah, I'm outraged too. It annoys me. And you need that to happen. We are allowed to say whatever we feel, and we must stop worrying a bit more about, you know, making it right for everyone, because that's what we're so good at as women, isn't it? We just make it right for everyone, put ourselves in the back seat.
Yeah.
And so that shared experience is great. And then we always come back to the facts and the evidence, and we've got facts and evidence for everything, whether you should have hormone replacement therapy after breast cancer. We've got evidence now. So we can talk about the evidence that we've got, and then we can talk about the problems with the evidence that we've got, because I think that's where the – so anytime you have opposite opinions from doctors or opposing views or a controversial conversation, what it's telling us is, well, the evidence is just not as black and white, right? Otherwise, they could make up these opposite opinions. So then we look at – the evidence. So for example, with evidence around hormone replacement therapy after breast cancer, it's very old, very old. The number of women we had in these studies, very small. Some studies showed that there was a bit of an increased risk of breast cancer. Then it was aborted early. And another study where people were followed up for a longer period of time actually didn't show an increased risk of breast cancer. But all of those studies used preparations of hormone replacement therapy that people don't use today. No menopause specialist would use them.
Right.
Okay, so then we say, okay, we have data. These randomized control studies, trials, are everything our doctors can base their decisions on. I get it. That's how they make their decisions. And they are also the first ones to say, well, Dani, we know these trials aren't perfect because of the things I've just mentioned. And so that's where we are at. Often people say, I really think I need HRT, but after they've tried other things, that might not be their burning desire anymore. And so for a lot of times it's saying, how do we navigate this conflicting information? Is we need to talk about what we know, and we need to talk about what we don't know. And then we need to sit with whoever person that is, because we all take different risks. Some people, you know, would never ride a bicycle without their helmet, and other people just wouldn't even consider wearing a helmet. Some people continue to eat sugar and drink after a cancer diagnosis, and other people stop alcohol and, you know, remove sugar from their diet. We're all so different. Who am I to say what you should or shouldn't do? No one. If you're curious, if your mum is curious and she had those questions, she deserves the answers. I'm not saying it's going to be easy for her to sift through the different opinions, but if you're curious, You've got to just keep asking and nagging and knocking on people's doors until you have the answers that you need to make an informed decision.
And that is exactly what she did. And she was able to make a decision before the surgery. And, you know, and that is great. I think what you're describing, it's curiosity, but also there needs to be a shift in mindset, maybe a little bravery, because a lot of us don't feel comfortable asking questions or bothering our doctors. That's another important piece. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely agree. And we can't always do it. It's what I want to say to people at home, whether they're navigating perimenopause naturally or whether you've had a health condition, whether that was cancer or something else that has put you into menopause, maybe early or something else. You know, we have other complex histories that come into place at the same time as perimenopause and a cancer diagnosis. And sometimes everything is a bit much. We can't always tackle these difficult decisions and try and find an answer, because sometimes everything else is actually exhausting. We're exhausted. We don't sleep very well. Sometimes we've got loads of other symptoms. And sometimes you've just got to say, do you know what? I'm just getting by for a few months and I'm going to rebuild my house a little bit. And when I have a tiny bit of energy left, I'm going to go and revisit and go to the doctor. And so often when people say, come into our programs or workshops, the first thing we say is take the foot off the pedal, maybe remove a few social media accounts. And an overflow of information sometimes can really stop us in our tracks.
Yeah.
It's too much. There is so much we listen to, and especially at 3 o'clock in the morning when Dr. Google gives us all these amazing answers. I'm so bad with that. But then you wake up in the morning and you still don't know what to do because it's too much. And sometimes it's getting through and doing one little bit and maybe looking after your diet or trying to exercise or whatever it might be. And then thinking, when I've got a bit more energy, I'll tackle this really difficult thing. Because then you have the energy to say to your doctor, hang on a minute, but you still haven't given me the answer. Who can help me find out? And that takes energy. Like Michelle said, it's exhausting. It takes it out of you.
I wanted to circle back on something you said a few minutes ago, Dani. You talked about for some people, it turns out that HRT isn't the right, or hormone replacement or hormone therapy isn't the right option. Are there some other options that you could share with us that you or some of the people you've encountered find beneficial, and that might be beneficial for people who are in perimenopause, but not because of, or in menopause or perimenopause and struggling, but not because of cancer?
Loads. And I'm going to go into them in a second. But before I do, I also want to say it's choosing the right time when you are inquiring is also important, and that you can always change your mind. So we have women who, you know, who are going through active cancer treatment. They're not going to worry too much about their menopause. They've got bigger fish to fry. They need to survive. They need to get through this next bit. However, some women come to us 12 years after a cancer diagnosis, and maybe they're then arriving into perimenopause naturally for a second time. And they're thinking, oh my gosh, I've still got no doctor wanting to help me because I've had cancer all those years ago. I'm still being lumped into this breast cancer group, for example. But what do I do? Oh, my cancer was treated. I'm 15 years on. And as a person then, you might have different questions. And you might think, is hormone replacement therapy maybe an option for me now? It's a very different conversation to when you're a year on from your treatment. And you might have a different curiosity around that. And so it's also important to say, whatever you start doing now, you can change your mind, which is the great thing. And also, just because something wasn't relevant to you 5 years ago doesn't mean it's not relevant today. And so when we look at all of our non-hormonal prescribable options, for example, just because your doctor might not want to prescribe you hormone replacement therapy doesn't mean they can prescribe other things. And so, for example, I know on your podcast, you would have talked about that hormone replacement therapy is the first line option to treat the symptoms of the perimenopause and menopause, and it's not antidepressants. All right, that's what the guidelines, for example, of the British Menopause Society tell us. If a woman is perimenopausal, menopausal, first line treatment is hormone replacement therapy, not antidepressants. But when you're a woman with a history of cancer, antidepressants can be a really, really helpful medication. They're often prescribed in much lower doses than to a person that is clinically depressed. And a byproduct is they can help you with hot flushes, low mood, night sweats, irritability, anxiety. And so if a woman knows what her symptoms are, like say you've evaluated your top three symptoms and you are very clear in explaining those to your doctor might think, oh, this person has those symptoms, this particular antidepressant in a very low dose might really help her. We have so many experts on the Menopause and Cancer podcast who can talk about that, and they're very well equipped to talk about that. I'm just sharing what they've shared with me because obviously I'm not the medic, but I know some women in our community take medications like oxybutynin that can help with hot flushes and bladder symptoms. So for some women, they have really bad sort of, you know, every time they put the key in the lock, they're like, oh, am I going to make it to the toilet? That sort of, and hot flushes, and where maybe HRT is contraindicated, some prescribable options are really helpful. And women say it's really helped them. But we have to be so reflected again, don't we? Because some women say, well, I had so many drugs, chemotherapy, radiotherapy. I'm not having any other medication in my body. I want to go clean my body from all the toxins. And then we look at what else there is. So we have great evidence for alternative therapies to be very helpful. We have big, big studies on acupuncture, for example, really helping with low mood, anxiety, hot flushes, cognitive behavior therapy. It's harder to access. Yes, it's harder than taking a tablet maybe, but cognitive behavior therapy can really help in how you experience hot flushes. And there is a thing called cognitive behavior therapy for insomnia. It's a very specific program that can help with insomnia, for example. So it's knowing that there are alternative therapies. And then, of course, herbal medication. We mustn't poo-poo it. And the reason we mustn't downplay it is because it is so potent and so strong that it can actually interfere with some cancer medication you're on. So women who are, for example, on tamoxifen shouldn't take certain herbal medications because it can lower the efficiency of their cancer medication. Now, what that tells us, though, it's potent and it works. And if it can work in a negative way, it has the benefit to work in a positive way. So if someone is listening to this thinking, I haven't had cancer, I'm in a perimenopause, I don't want to take anything that maybe isn't natural, then it's great to explore that gut feeling. Because what we have forgotten as people is to explore what our gut is telling us and what are you drawn to. And if someone is listening thinking, yeah, I believe in the power of plants, I want to research that, then put your energy into that and research that and do that. But of course, we also know that lifestyle, like avoiding triggers, too much caffeine, having spicy foods. And did you know if you had hot cups of tea in the afternoon, it can throw a hot flush at you at 3 o'clock in the morning?
Oh, I did not know that. No.
Right. And so our body stores the heat, or like hot baths. We often say to women, have a hot bath. It'll really calm you down. But if you have a hot bath in the afternoon or evening, your body stores that heat. 2 o'clock in the morning, your leg comes out of the duvet. 2:30 in the morning, the duvet comes off and you're there with a hot flush. So it's also knowing, or, you know, women often say to me, I've changed my diet, Dani. I'm now putting loads of ginger in my smoothies. And then the next thing they say to me, yeah, I just really need to figure out how to treat my hot flushes. And I'm thinking, yeah, ginger isn't going to be the thing.
Get rid of the ginger.
Yeah, right. And so it's thinking, there's lots we can do in small things, is finding out what are our triggers. Like, we also know that stress makes all of our symptoms worse, and it can even decrease how good our bones are. And we know bone health is a real worry for women in general, and chronic stress has a negative impact on our bones. And it's important because we've forgotten to give ourselves agency. Things like reducing triggers, exercise, diet, lowering our stress response. Those are things in our total agency.
Yes.
And they're going to work really well if we do them. That's the problem, isn't it? We all know we should eat a few more vegetables, uh-huh. But it's like then doing it, isn't it? But it's like really starting to believe we have agency. And before you know it, you realize, oh yeah, I have more options than I thought. You know, when doctors said to your mum, mm-hmm. when they said, you might have to come off your HRT, mm-hmm. That's all they said. They weren't giving her all of the other options.
Right.
If anyone had counseled your mom properly and said, okay, look, we might talk about you coming off HRT for various reasons, mm-hmm. but let's also work together on creating another plan that will support you. Your mom might have never panicked.
Yeah, absolutely.
So much. She might have still made the same decision, yeah. whatever, because I don't know what she's decided to do. Her decision-making process maybe would have been the same, but the fear, the scaremongery, her huge worry about what might happen, that might not have had needed to happen, I don't think.
Oh, I agree. Absolutely.
Every doctor needs to say, hey, listen to the Menopause and Cancer podcast and then we'll talk again in a week.
We'll talk again, exactly.
Binge on this for a week.
Yeah. On that point, are there providers that you recommend your followers go to, or how do you suggest they build their team to be in line with their wants and desires and the quality of life they deserve?
Yeah, it is a tricky one. And as our podcast has grown into Australia, New Zealand, America, Canada, it's really trying to find access for each person wherever they're at. But even here in the UK, we get very different care depending on where you live. It's a bit of a postcode lottery. Mm-hmm. Some people have all these brilliant oncologists that talk about it. Other people, you know, a bit less interested. Once you realize what you're going through and once that awareness has arisen, oh gosh, this is going to be it now. I'm in menopause after cancer. You know, we sort of need to wake up to that. And that curiosity arises in us thinking, how am I going to sort myself out? We'll know quite quickly who in our team is going to be helpful because it's starting the conversation and it's starting to hear what comes back. Do you have a clinical nurse specialist? If you're still under a team, that might be a good contact and say, I'm experiencing this. I know it's a side effect. It was probably meant to happen, but who can help me? And continuously ask who can help me with that and trying to see how you can feel your way through who you've got in your team currently. That might be a pharmacist. So women who are, for example, on drugs like tamoxifen, which I've mentioned before, and they might be on this drug for 5 or 10 years, sometimes even their prescribing brand, like the supplier of the brand you take, makes a difference to your symptoms. It doesn't make any sense, right? The medication is the same, but just by switching brands and products or by taking it a different time of the day, those are all little tweaks you can do yourself. It can make a big difference. So your pharmacist could become a thinking partner, thinking, hey, I'm on this medication. I meant to do this for 5 years. I'm not sure I can. I'm not feeling great. Have you got any tips for me?
They are a wealth of knowledge.
They are. And it's not just taking the status quo and thinking, well, that's it now. Well, no, it's not. What we know from women is their symptoms change. Whatever you're experiencing today, you're not going to experience forever. Symptoms come and go. They change. And then also thinking, well, if they're there, if they're present, reach out, ask whoever is around you that you can literally reach and have that conversation with, instead of thinking, well, that's my lot. I've survived cancer. I should be so grateful. And that's just a trade-off for having survived cancer. And I don't want to give unrealistic hope and false expectations. It's unrealistic to think that we're always going to be symptom-free. When I talk about an empowered menopause, it's not a symptom-free menopause necessarily, but it is about knowing people can help us when we're struggling and then trying to do a bit better. It's doing something is better than nothing.
Well, and that arguably it's nothing, and maybe that gets you to the next step and then you feel a little bit better and then it's the next step, because I think we also tend to have an expectation of things and of ourselves to just be better, right? All in one fell swoop.
And many women, when they are in perimenopause naturally, we often think something is wrong with us. Like, I speak to so many cancer survivors who have so many symptoms and they want to tell me that they're not working out enough. That's why they are overweight. They are not trying hard enough. That's why they don't make it to the gym. That they should be doing better. Their mental health, I thought for years I should be in a much better place than I was, but no. Our bodies are presenting us with a natural reaction to what's happening on the inside underneath that layer of skin. And whether that is your perimenopausal and your hormones change and it's a natural evolution, but you're out of whack, or whether that is because it's been brought on by a cancer treatment. It's listening to what's going on inside of us, but also knowing it's none of our fault. Our bodies are reacting because of what's happening inside. It's a normal, natural reaction. And that requires a bit of rethinking, right? Thinking of doing things differently, coming up with a plan, but also asking for help.
And being kinder to ourselves, right? Like just accepting that
it's okay to not be okay.
No, I totally agree with that, because for as soon as my cancer treatment finished, I thought, that's it, now I'm back to normal. Oh my God, what a big illusion. For a decade nearly, I've been trying to find the old Danny, and I've still not got her back, because what I forgot is to realize that I was evolving into a new version of myself. Like every perimenopausal woman is, we are transitioning through phases and decades of our lives, and every phase brings with it a different, almost personality layer of ourselves. But at one point, as young women, we were brainwashed that we're always going to be like, we're in our prime. Well, what is our prime? In my generation, I'm in my mid-40s now. Maybe I still think sometimes our prime is in our 20s or early 30s. But hang on a minute. No, who told us this? But we keep holding on and wanting the older versions of ourselves back. And the problem with that is we don't then allow ourselves to create a new version that we want to be, that we want to create. And that's where I think it's exciting, where we have potency, where there is agency, and whether I think, gosh, my new version of Danny doesn't need to be better than my old self. She's just different, different kind of girl. She's not up, you know, at 3 o'clock in the morning knocking back vodka shots at every party. No. No, but other things
she
get me out
of bed.
She
up at 3 a.m, but for other reasons, yes.
Yeah, yes. But other things really light up my fire, and that is connection and community and women, and oh my gosh, like it's even more exciting.
I totally agree. It's a journey, and if we allow ourselves to have it and give ourselves the grace to have it, I think what we can find is absolutely incredible. I've been sitting here, Michelle, wondering if Danny knows the Good Sleep Clinic.
I know. I was thinking the same thing. I was wondering.
So Dr. Zoe Shadell, who is a co-founder of the Good Sleep Clinic, is one of our medical advisors for our not-for-profit.
Oh, we interviewed Maya and Zoe like 2 weeks ago.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, Dr. Zoe Shadell is amazing. She runs a very big National Health Menopause Clinic that people can have access through on the National Health as well. So she sees a lot of complex cases. And when people say to me, there is nothing I can do, I'm on this cancer treatment and that's why I'm not sleeping, I'm always got Zoe in the back of my head thinking, no, no, no. Zoe says there's always something you can do, even if you stay on that medication. And there is so much hope in that. People often don't go to the doctors with their symptoms because they actually think, well, there isn't much my doctor is going to be able to do for me.
Or they've maybe been and the doctor has said, there's not much they can do, but maybe you just need to ask another doctor and maybe another doctor, right? Until you find the Dr. Mayas and the Dr. Zoes of the world.
Yeah. Or if you can't afford them, it's to really then tapping into more resources, apps and places they're on, and listen to podcasts like yours where you get amazing people like Dr. Zoe Shadell on and doing a little bit more of that. Yeah, they're brilliant.
Amazing. We're getting close to time, and I'm sure that Danny's got a lot of other things on her plate today. Is there anything else you would like us to cover, Danny, that maybe we didn't touch on? Or
No, I just hope it's also an helpful information. Like, I hope that people listening who aren't affected by cancer themselves just know that life does throw us these curveballs. And I think they don't need to be big. And I don't want people at home listening thinking, oh, I am not as bad. You know, I haven't had cancer. I'm going through perimenopause naturally. It's easier. We must stop comparing ourselves as women, because there will always be someone who is better off than you right now. And there will always be someone who is much worse off than you. And so it's pointless to compare our stories. If I speak to one person and she can't sleep for one night a week, that might be awful for that person, really throws her. And other people, you know, wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning and they sort of think, well, it's okay for me. I get through the day in my way. And so we mustn't compare. There is no hierarchy. When are we bad enough to get help? There is no such a thing. Is, I think, really for each of us to truly connecting to ourselves a little bit more and thinking, is everything okay? We don't spend time on ourselves anymore. You know, we spend time listening to podcasts and trying to figure things out and sorting everything else around us. But to truly think, what do I need right now? And how can I help or serve myself is a really important question that we don't ask ourselves anymore. But when we do, good answers come. And it's a different answer at different times in our lives. And I think to keep that open mind is really important, to stop comparing, to stop judging, and just to sort of be on our own journey and evolve with ourselves is something I'm really passionate about sharing with everyone listening today, whatever their history and wherever they're heading.
I love it.
It's amazing. Thank you. So an update on my mom, she did have the double mastectomy and the reconstructive surgery at the same time, which was fantastic because they weren't sure they would be able to do that. The prognosis is great. She does not have hormone positive cancer, and her oncologist, who made the final call along with several other specialists' input, said, no, you can keep taking hormone replacement. There is no issue. So she's decided she's going to continue because for her, her symptoms are just really unmanageable without it. So despite the fact that she's well beyond perimenopause at this point.
Yeah. There is one thing I would like to add for everyone at home is, can we rethink that it's always our doctor's final call? Can I question that? I'm not saying we need to change it, but can we query that and question that? Because
I love that you just said that.
We are steering this ship. We are in charge of our care. We are in control of all of those things. And we can be guided by our doctors and helped by our doctors. But I always struggle a little bit with it. It's always there, like they're on top of us and they're deciding over us.
You're absolutely right. And ultimately, and that's something we talk about a lot amongst ourselves and on this podcast, it really should be our choice with the benefit of evidence-based information from skilled practitioners. But really, the choice should always be ours.
Because if you're in perimenopause and you're navigating this naturally, and one woman will say, your best friend will say to you, hey, really, HRT is the way for me. But your other best friend says, I don't want to touch it. I just want to go a different way. It's both so valid. It's both so okay. There is no right or wrong. And it's the same whether you're managing it naturally or after a cancer diagnosis. And then we stop the judging and we look at every woman with a bit more compassion, thinking, hey, yeah, you do you and I do me. And let our doctors guide us and we do our own thing. And that to me is empowering.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. This has been fantastic. And you can tell that you've done almost 100 episodes on your podcast. You're a great guest, fantastic.
Thank you so much.
Oh, and thank you for all the work you're doing. It's incredible.
And I couldn't get it out there without people like you who are allowing me to tell my story and to share the information that goes on in our community. So, yeah, thank you for elevating our voices.
Thanks so much for listening to the show. If you like what you hear, please take a moment to rate and subscribe to our podcast. When you do this, it helps to raise our podcast profile so more women can find us and get a little better understanding of what to expect in perimenopause.
We also read all the reviews, the good, the bad, and the ugly, to help us continuously improve our show. We would love to hear from you. You can connect with us through the podcast, on social media, or through our website. Our information, as well as links and details from our conversation today, can be found in the show notes. This podcast is for general information only. It's designed to educate, inspire, and support you on your personal journey through perimenopause. The information and opinions on this podcast are not intended to be a substitution for primary care, diagnosis, or treatment. The information on this podcast does not replace professional healthcare advice. The use of the information discussed is at the sole discretion of the listener. If you are suffering from symptoms or have questions, please consult a qualified healthcare practitioner.